May it please the Court, Mr. Eason is asking this Court to overturn the two-level enhancement regards to the obstruction of justice in this case that was imposed at sentencing, taking his criminal offense level from a level 27 to a level 29. Mr. Eason argues that the District Court's finding on this obstruction issue were deficient, and the decision to give it in this case was error. The bottom line in regards to the testimony that the Court found to be untruthful to be the reason to give the obstruction in this case was not material. It was questions in response to under cross-examination regarding the defendant's affidavit, which was attached to his motion to suppress. Obviously, Your Honors, that the record is clear that Mr. Eason did respond to the questions that he had not seen the affidavit. Regarding omissions or questions regarding facts that were not in the affidavit, which counsel for the government was questioning him about. That testimony at the time after the motion was concluded was not specifically addressed as perjury. The Court made a determination that he found Mr. Eason's testimony to be hard to follow and in some ways incredible, and ruled in favor of the government. But according to this Court, in order to have obstruction of justice for this type of an incident, even if the evidence is untruthful, even if the testimony is willful and untruthful, it still has to be material. And the fact of the matter is there's nothing about Mr. Eason's responses to that affidavit which would help him in any way. It's no way that he could connive or circumvent the process that was undertaken, that the motion to suppress. It absolutely blew his credibility in some ways out of the water. So because he did not include a particular chronology of events or left a fact out that he had testified to does not rise to the level, obviously, of perjury, and his response that he hadn't seen the affidavit had nothing to do with the ultimate resolution of the case. The issue in the particular case was, in the motion, was whether or not at the time that he reinitiated contact with law enforcement, was he coerced? Was there evidence that was presented to him or threats made to him regarding involving his family, his girlfriend, and his sister that caused Mr. Eason to now give a confession to alleviate the pressure off of them? That is the issue that I wish to address to the Court today specifically, that, in fact, under the case law, United States versus Dunnigan, there has to be willfulness, there has to be untruth, and there has to be materiality. And there's nothing about this particular statement that allows the Court, and in its findings, the Court's findings were deficient in this area, to say that is a material fact affecting the outcome of the, that would affect the outcome of the case, and therefore it should be obstruction of justice.
You know, if you look in the transcript and you look at how this question and answer went about, and so I'd like you to help me with this and help me understand how the Court didn't adequately cover this. The prosecutor's asking questions, and it's in the motion to suppress hearing, and the defendant keeps interrupting and making unresponsive remarks, which appeared to me as I was reading them, trying to get the prosecutor off the point and back to a point the defendant wanted to make. But in any event, the point that I'm trying to make is he's making spontaneous utterances throughout this examination. And then the trial court makes this finding. He talks about the affidavit and what he believed or didn't believe about that. He then says, I believe that's just a total disrespect for the entire process that we were undergoing at that point in time, his testimony under oath in this court. I think that is an obstruction of justice. So perhaps he could have been a little more clear, but it seemed to me, as I was reading that and trying to put myself in the position of the judge, isn't he describing this whole question and answer and this whole testimony when he talks about a total disrespect for the entire process and what we were undergoing at this point in time as testimony under oath? I think it's an obstruction of justice. Doesn't that adequately explain it?
Your Honor, I think that Your Honor's point is well taken, but I think specifically the reason for the obstruction had to do with what the district court felt was perjured testimony regarding not seeing his affidavit. I believe it's pretty clear that's what the government was asking for, and I believe that at sentencing that was addressed in regards to the obstruction. I think at the time of the ruling denying the motion to suppress, the court had made some a record regarding he found at times the defendant's testimony to be hard to follow and didn't make much sense, I think would probably generalize what he was saying. And then later at sentencing, he made more of a specific finding and had more of a, I would say, a, using the term disrespectful would be more of an emotional response to what he felt was a fraud perpetrated on the court. Maybe that's what the district court had felt.
But well, I think it was all this that I was talking about came in the context of him saying, the defendant saying, that the affidavit, it was the first time he'd seen that affidavit, and he kept interrupting the prosecutor and asserting things about his girlfriend and all these kind of things. But it's all in that same context. Because I was trying to figure out what the judge meant by total disrespect for the entire process.
Well, I think that...
And I thought that's what he was talking about when he said the entire process.
I understand what the court's saying, but I believe, having been there, that I believe that he was attributing that specific thing to a disrespect. That the fact that, and I think the court had made a point of saying, well, you're impugning counsel by saying that, you're, you know, giving the prosecutor a hard time when you're denying not seeing the affidavit upon cross-examination, throwing all of us into the pool of disrespect. I think that's clear that the court did feel that way, and I don't disagree with Your Honor at all about that. I think that at the time, the court felt that we all were being tossed into this mix, but I really do believe that the issue regarding obstruction has to be clearer than that. And I think what clearly the court was saying was that here was our definite untruth, was that I hadn't seen the affidavit before. And the question and answer was, well, I had signed it, you had read it, so obviously I'm not going to stand up here before you and say that that didn't happen, because I believe it did happen. And then at the time, those were the answers to the questions. Is that what the record? That's what the record reflects. But I am basing my argument solely on the fact that I believe, and the defendant believes also, that the obstruction is about the affidavit, and that's where the court raised its ire, enhanced it by two levels, sentenced him under a guideline range of 140 to 175 months based on a level 29 criminal history category of 5. So that is which I'd like to leave it at that. If the court has any other questions regarding any other issues, I would rest in my brief, but I would that's all I have to offer.
Thank you, Mr. McQuaid. Mr. Block?
May it please the court, I'm Stephen Block, and I'm appearing on behalf of the United States. The district court in this case found that the defendant willfully committed perjury on a material matter, and therefore the obstruction enhancement was appropriate, and the record adequately supports the district court's finding that the untruthful testimony was willful and material. With regards to the issue of materiality, going to Judge Herndon's question, the court did say specifically that he believed that this was a disrespect to the entire process that we were undergoing at that point in time. And I believe that a reasonable reading of that statement is not that there was disrespect in sort of the colloquial sense of someone speaking in a disrespectful tone, perhaps, but really disrespectful as to what the court was trying to accomplish at that time. And that was to determine the credibility of witnesses get to the truth, essentially, and make a determination on a pending motion. And when the defendant says that he did not read the affidavit that he signed and supported in support of that motion, it certainly was material in that it was likely to influence the outcome of that proceeding. As we point out in our brief, if the court did not believe the defendant, did not find him credible, the defendant could not prevail upon that motion. The defendant had to have the court believe him. And Your Honor referenced a portion of the transcript where the defendant's statement was spontaneous. It was not in response to a question. At that point in time, the prosecutor, myself, was attempting to impeach the defendant by omission, pointing out inconsistencies between his affidavit and his testimony. And what the defendant did, not in response to a question, was attempt to distance himself from that affidavit to therefore bolster his credibility. So from the government's view, it certainly was material. It went to the credibility, which was at issue. Unless the panel has additional questions at this point, the government would respectfully rest on its briefs.
All right. Thanks to all counsel. Mr. McQuaid, you have the additional thanks to the court for accepting the appointment and ably representing Mr. Easton. All right, the case is taken under advisement.